Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 277. I hear parrots. Do you guys hear parrots? I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys? Do you hear parrots?
Nope.
I must be hearing things then. I'm pretty sure there's a parrot in here.
Oh, Ramana.
I think it's that big word.
That big word. Bifurcation?
I was going to go with temporal shifting, but yeah, we can go with yours.
That's two words, Sean.
No, it's hyphenated.
Oh, okay. Did you guys have a good week?
Four H's and a silent Q, you figure it out.
Say anything with a convincing tone, Sean. Maybe people will believe it.
Anything with a convincing tone.
Oh, I believe it.
Guess what I did?
What'd you do?
I'll go first. Guess what I did?
What'd you do?
I finished 11-22-63.
How was it?
11-22-63.
The Stephen King time travel
on
book.
On Hulu, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the series is on Hulu. You finished the book. All right.
And before anybody out there gets any ideas, no, I didn't start reading it just because there's a TV show on.
Yeah, he did.
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
I've owned this book for a long time, and I just haven't had a chance to read it.
He saw the trailer for the TV show and said,
I should read that.
I honestly had forgotten it was going to be a TV show until I was halfway through the book and somebody asked me, oh, are you reading that because of the show? And I went, what show? And I said, you know, that one that's on. I was like, it's already on?
I can vouch for him because I was living with him when the book came out and he went and picked it up.
Oh, I know he got it. Yeah.
God, was it that long ago?
That was that long ago. It's long enough that they made a TV show, Sean.
So is it anything like the show?
I don't know.
Is it good?
It's really good. Yes, really, really, really good.
Well, that must have been why they decided to make a show out of it.
I think that may have something to do with it. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Loved it. It trucks. It's pretty, for despite being 850-some-odd pages,
No wonder it's a miniseries.
It moved at a pretty good clip. And,
surprised it's not a full-blown series with a book that long.
Yeah, no kidding.
Don't give them any ideas, because then they'll under the dome it. Hey, that book was really good. Let's do another season.
Depending on how good this series does on Hulu, they may give it a second mini-series for that matter. Anything from Hollywood.
I just want people to realize that when you adapt a book, you've got a definitive beginning, middle, and end. If you go into, you know, season one and then halfway through go, oh, let's do a season two. It's like, you can't do a season two. You've already plotted out the end of this thing, theoretically. You should have had that. Anyway, the book's great. Highly recommend it. You especially would love it. You, I don't know about you, but it's good. But yeah. So.
What else did you do?
Not one mention of Doctor Who in that book.
Though. Yeah.
You'd think, since it's 1963.
You'd think.
And it's all set in the UK. That's really strange that they would set a book in the UK and not mention Doctor Who. Wait a minute. It's not set in the UK?
It's not set in the UK.
It's set in where? The United States?
Yeah.
Well, of course there's no mention of Doctor Who. Are you kidding me?
No.
But the guy from the future would know of it.
The guy from the future would know of it. Oh, that's true. Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe not classic Doctor Who. The guy from the future, he thinks Doctor Who started in 2005. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Guy from the future goes back in time to stop JFK from being assassinated. Now, if I'm this guy, I've got two things on my agenda. Option number one, stop JFK from being assassinated.
I'm glad that's number one.
That's number one. Number two, sit down and watch Doctor Who the next day.
I thought maybe it would be get with somebody at the BBC and said, hey, you know, you're going to have this inclination to wipe some episodes later on.
Don't.
Hold on to this.
That would have been three.
Or find somebody with some money who would then buy up the overseas copies early on.
That'd be four.
Realistically, you could do that because, I mean, obviously, from the future, you could invest in.
You can do it yourself.
I love how we have put. Fortunately, the priority of saving JFK first. But we've put more resources into saving Doctor Who in the 2, 3, and 4. Well,
the other 2, 3, and 4 take more time.
Yeah, with JFK, it's a phone call, dude. Don't come to Dallas.
And it took him 800 pages to do that?
Crossed it off the list. I'm ready to go to England.
Wow, I don't have to read the book now. All it took was a phone call. 800 words. Talk about wordy.
Oh, spoilers. There's a little more to it than that.
Okay. I'd hope so.
Well, there's a lot more to it than that. But.
Did you do anything else this week, John?
We watched some more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Had a big meeting with the Planet Comic-Con folks for dishing out our volunteer duties and whatnot for that. It's coming up next month. Had some pretty exciting news that I can't necessarily leak. Well, I could, but I'm not going to. Ha ha ha! Sucks to be you! About some developments at British Fest that I'm pretty excited and happy about, and you all will get to see the fruits of those labors later. Yes, I did not stutter. I said, see the fruits of those labors. How's that for a cryptic comment?
I got three movies watched this week.
What'd you watch?
I watched Crimson Peak.
Heard it was good. Heard it's not scary.
Well, the ghosts in it are very creepy and scary. Very Guillermo del Toro. But it's kind of like Pan's Labyrinth in that aspect of you go in expecting a lot of ghosts or a lot of labyrinth, and it's really not that much of the movie. It was really entertaining, and I came away liking it. It's very atmospheric and very gothic. It's kind of weird. It's not the top of the Del Toro movies by any stretch. And then I watched The Good Dinosaur. I really enjoyed that one. It's one I don't know if I'd go back and watch a lot, but I really enjoyed it while watching it. And then the third one I watched was Love and Mercy.
Ooh, I want to see that.
It's really well done, kind of weird, and I had no idea about all this stuff that Brian Wilson went through. That was pretty much all I did. Finished Sleepy Hollow Season 3.
What'd you do?
We finished Mason's Pinewood Derby car. We did that, and then I've caught up on, caught up. I'm caught up to nearly you guys. I'm at season 4 on Clone Wars, which I'm so loving, and I think season 3 was awesome. Some of the best bit of television I've ever seen were the first 3 episodes of season 4. Mason and I sat down and decided to watch the first 2 episodes, which I had seen pieces of anyway, of Rebels. That's pretty much it. The kids were working on their cosplay this afternoon for Planet Comic-Con. So yesterday they did. They started it, and today they... Actually, I say that. We bought stuff for Caitlin's, and Caitlin and Mason have sat down and started on Mason's themselves.
Ooh.
So they are going to be Undertale characters. For listeners, if they're curious, she's going to be Undyne, which is this blue fish girl. And he's going to be a little character called Sans, which is a little skeleton guy. So It'll be fun.
Yeah, good for them. Wanting to cosplay. Shall we move on to news then? Our first bit of news. Wendy Padbury is coming back to Big Finish for some new adventures. Yay. As Zoe. 2 upcoming releases. She recently recorded one of Big Finish's monthly short trips. The British Invasion, and these are half-hour adventures are only available via download from the Big Finish website, so you got to go there to get that. It's not known when it will be released, but next February seems likely. And Lost and Found... Wait, no, that's not the second one. Sorry. Trying to find the second one. And the second one is... The Second Doctor Volume 1, Companion Chronicles. So it's a whole bunch of different stories. I'm trying to find this specific Zoe. Well, you'll just want to pick up that whole set. Because she's in several. The Integral by David Bartlett, The Edge by Rob Nisbol, and I'm not sure about... And those are the only 2 she's in. So. But the whole box set's going to be great because it's got The Mouthless Dead by John Pritchard, which has Ben and Polly and Jamie. A Story of Extinction, which has Jamie and Victoria. And then, of course, the other 2, which have Zoe and Jamie. So that's exciting that Wendy Padbury's coming back for some more Zoe action.
Can never have too much Wendy Padbury as Zoe.
You really can't. Other news... Torchwood's coming back in comic form. So we've got two forms for Torchwood right now. We've got the Big Finish Audios, and now Titan is bringing it back in comic form, written by John Barrowman and his sister Carol Barrowman, Carol E. Barrowman.
Who've written for Torchwood before, if I remember correctly.
They wrote a
Carol
they wrote a book.
Yeah. They wrote a book.
He co-wrote the book.
Yeah, both co-wrote the book. They haven't written for the TV show proper, but they wrote for external media.
Yeah, that one.
Sean, that wasn't the name of the book.
No.
Oh.
So the first issue will hit shelves July 6th, the week of Titan's third annual Doctor Who Comics event on July 9th. So you can go pick that up on Doctor Who Comics Day.
So Titan's really kind of Star Wars-ing this. We've got a 10th Doctor, an 11th Doctor, and a 12th Doctor line. They just started a 9th Doctor line.
They've got a 4th Doctor miniseries.
A 4th Doctor miniseries, an 8th Doctor miniseries, and now a Torchwood line.
Yeah, which is a full-blown line. It's not a miniseries.
It's not a miniseries, it's a line. That's a lot of comics each month.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
Yeah, it is.
It's exciting.
I like it.
Especially during these dismal months in between
seasons. It's really grand because Titan and Big Finish both have been doing a lot, don't get me wrong. But it's really encouraging to see a lot of this stuff, this kind of this big tentpole stuff coming up in this year, especially since we're not getting Doctor Who on television this year. And so for Big Finish and Titan both to kind of step forward and give us some really unique tentpole, items, it's very encouraging.
That and to be mainly New Who related.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. To keeping the torch going for Doctor Who. Impressive.
Yeah. I look forward to reading these and seeing how they pan out.
And, of course, we will get them on the schedule at some point coming up because Titan's been very good to us, and we wish to continue to be good to them and bring you all the reviews that are fit to print or broadcast.
Podcast.
In other news, TopCon has announced a new guest, Spencer Wilding.
Who's Spencer Wilding, Keith?
Spencer Wilding is a man underneath the makeup that you might not recognize, but you'd know the roles.
What's he been in, Keith?
He's been in Who, which is the main reason we're excited about this.
Spencer Wilding.
He was in Cold War.
You asked who?
I know, and I forgot the next line.
I don't know, it's on third.
What Wilding? It doesn't really work.
Nope, he played a White Walker. Nope. He wasn't a Wilding. Sorry, he was on Game of Thrones, too.
That worked.
Oh!
I'm going to sit quietly for at least 5 minutes.
Not that long.
No?
He was Skaldak in Cold War. He was the Wood King.
That was the Ice Warrior, right?
Yes.
Right.
He was the Wood King and the Doctor Widow in the Wardrobe. And he was the Creature in the God Complex. So the Minotaur.
Yeah, can we call him the Minotaur? He's kind of the Minotaur.
IMDb credited him as Creature.
Creature.
Because he's a cousin of the Minotaur. Or no, he's a cousin of the Nymon.
Yeah, he's a cousin of the Nymon. He was a Minotaur.
He was a Minotaur.
Because it was a labyrinth, and he was the keeper of the labyrinth. And the keeper of the labyrinth in Greek mythology was a Minotaur. He was a Minotaur.
Imdb's just kind of gone down a little bit, in my estimation. They don't know what a Minotaur is?
I'm sure if I went to TARDIS Wiki, it would say otherwise. Other things that you might have seen him in, Guardians of the Galaxy, he's the headset, the Walkman guard.
The Walkman guard.
He's the guy.
Is that what IMDb credited him as?
No.
Walkman guard?
Mean guard.
Okay.
Mean guard on
mean
that
Mean guard,
one.
Oh well, okay.
Because that narrows it down.
Okay. Well, I like yours much better.
Walkman guard was more descriptive, I suppose.
I see.
We need to get on IMDb
wasn't his Walkman,
and edit it. Can we do that?
I don't have those privileges.
No, I mean, but can we?
He was also in...
You're much better at this than IMDb is.
I will do what I can. I'll see if I can become an editor on
IMDb. I used to be an editor. I don't know if I still have credentials.
You have to pay, don't you?
Or have a... Like, the reason I was an editor is because we had a short film entered in a festival, and so we were able to go in there and add our information. So that's why you're all on IMDb, thanks to me. That's why you can IMDb any one of us and find us in credits. So.
And it will not say creature.
No, it won't say creature.
Nor, unfortunately, will it say Walkman.
I'm credited as a man in derby in the movie Kansas City. So, if you don't believe me, look it up.
He also was in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, his first on-air credit as an actor. He was a Vogon soldier.
Was he in the movie, or was he in the TV series?
The movie.
I thought he was relatively young.
He is. First role, 2005.
He's a big guy, too.
He is.
6'7", I think.
There's a certain rumor going around now, too, that
you might be seeing a lot more of him recently.
But, yeah, we might be seeing him in a rather prominent role, although the character hasn't even been confirmed in the movie that he's rumored to be in. But, yeah, he may or may not be playing Darth Vader in Rogue One.
Spoilers.
May or may not. It's a rumor, so it's not really a spoiler until it's been verified. Then it's a spoiler.
No, I don't think you can get away with that rationale.
Yeah, no, it's an
unsubstantiated rumor. I agree, it's an unsubstantiated rumor. But if I had come out 6 months ago and said, so there's a rumor that Han Solo may die in The Force Awakens.
Spoilers.
But it's a rumor.
Ouch, I'm not even sure that the spoiler
it's out on Blu-ray.
Has been lifted on
really?
That.
It's out on Blu-ray.
Wow. Sean.
I am the biggest king of not spoiling anything. You guys are going to come out.
I don't think I would have even said that at this point. I mean, he's not even cold in the grave 6 months, and you're already spoiling that?
We'll have to edit this out.
Ouch.
Go with Dumbledore instead.
What do you mean, Dumbledore? Dumbledore's not dead?
He gets a name drop in the new trailer. He's alive, and
I'm just saying you can't.
Next thing you're going to tell me is Bruce Willis in that movie, The Sixth Sense, is dead.
Yep.
What?
If I came out 6 years ago and said, "So the Titanic sinks," but it's an unsubstantiated rumor at this point.
6 months ago?
Six years. I said six years.
6 years ago?
Yeah.
You need to have come out in 19 something.
Was it 1914, 1912?
No, the movie.
Well, we knew that was going to happen.
We knew that based on the factual events in 1912.
He could have changed the ending.
Or whatever, whenever it happened.
Quentin Tarantino changed the ending of World War II. They could have changed the ending of that movie. That's my point.
Whoa. Quentin Tarantino changes the ending of World War II in what?
Inglourious Basterds.
Spoilers! I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I just
assumed. Come on, guys. Really?
I haven't seen that movie.
Just spoil everything.
Hold on, I'm trying to think of something else.
Yeah, what's something big? We landed on the moon?
Next thing you're going to tell me that Vader is Luke's father or something.
Rosebud's a sleigh?
Sled. Close enough.
Close.
You're going to do spoilers, get them right.
Oh, so close. I put these not quite right spoilers out there and no one believes them.
Not quite right. I'm going to write a book. No, we're going to have a blog. Not quite right
not
spoilers.
Quite right spoilers.
The Not Quite Right Spoilers Podcast. That's our next one.
I think at the very least that should be a Twitter thing. Note to self. Let's go register our domain name.
Not Quite Right Spoilers. I like that. It'll really throw you off.
Where you don't think you got spoiled, but you really did. I'm trying to think of other great examples of that.
Oh, wait. Do I have to have a separate email to sign up with this new thing?
Not quite right spoilers at gmail.com. Come on.
Speaking of convention news, there's some galley convention news, Sean.
Is there?
Yeah, you were telling us about it.
Oh. Well, you should have said something. Should have said something before I switched over to Twitter to register
a new.
They
are still failing him.
Every time. Tickets for Gallifrey One's 2017 are sold out.
Oh,
not that we didn't expect that. It took a little longer.
Spoilers.
Go to sleep. Not that we didn't expect it. It took a little longer this year than last, but it did sell out. I think they lasted all of an hour, if that.
Oh, that's better than 12 minutes or whatever it was.
One piece of news that came out of this, apparently Gallifrey One has switched over to using Eventbrite for the ticket booking, and all of the reports that I saw were extremely favorable, and that it was a much easier and more not pulling of the hair, gnashing of the teeth, throwing of the computer kind of experience. So hopefully that's something they stick with for future years.
Yeah,
and hopefully. If you got your tickets, fantastic for you. We are extremely happy. We will not be seeing you next year.
But we're looking for correspondents. So
yeah.
If you're going next year, or think about us and turn in some galley reports for us. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
We'll remind you again many times between now and February.
There you go. And I think that's it for news.
That is it for news. And no feedback this week, but if you want to, you can send us feedback on our website. There's a Send Feedback tab. Or you can send it directly to us at feedback@travelingthevortex.com. You can reach out to us on social media or on Facebook, Traveling the Vortex, or Twitter, @TravelVortex. And don't forget about the Goodreads Book Club on Goodreads. Join in on the discussion there. My chair is really squeaky.
You're really squeaky today. Really squeaky. I've
not even moving that much.
I thought you were moving more than normal.
Am I?
Yeah, I thought so, but
it's coming across too. That's why I looked, is seeing if it was your chair. Or it's definitely not.
Apparently,
yours.
Got a wiggle bit.
We've got these different.
We've
chairs.
Got different chairs. I gave up on the other two. I'm not even going to bother rewelding them. I'm just going to toss them and buy new chairs. So I don't know when that'll happen, but.
If I see any, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
On discount.
Keep your eye out for it.
5-finger discount?
No, we don't encourage that.
If it's on a curb, why not? Oh, you mean in stores?
Good luck trying to get a chair out of the store.
Sneak, sneak, sneak.
What do you mean? I came in with this shit.
Hey, you, what do you got there? Nothing? I can't believe you trying to steal a chair.
Not a trench coat big enough.
Oh, shall we move on to our review then?
Yes, please.
Got ready for the door and a pack of folding chairs.
Clang, 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 clang.
I don't know where those came from.
I can almost guarantee they're not security tags, though.
Yeah. All right. The
Traveling the Vortex neither condones or condemns the stealing of chairs.
We don't condemn it.
The Traveling Vortex does not condemn. It's just, wait.
You said Traveling we neither condone or condemn. Okay. I think we need to rework the
Traveling the Vortex does not condone or endorse.
There we go.
The stealing of chairs.
You're going to get our lawyers all kinds of angry at us.
It's a chair. I don't like condemning
we,
it is.
We don't condone or condemn it. We're neither here nor there with it.
Condemning somebody for a chair is kind of...
No, we didn't condemn them for the chair. We condemned them for the theft of said chair.
Well, I'm condemning you for your chairs because his is squeaky.
I'll go steal a chair.
We don't condone
wait,
that.
Wait,
but
wait.
We don't condemn it.
Oh, man. Excuse me.
That's the name of this week's show, The Chair Thief Spoilers. Sounds like an Oscar movie, The Chair Thief. Doesn't it sound like an overly long, stuffy English film?
The 13th Chair Thief.
Don't steal chairs. I'm going to have that on my conscience all night now.
I'm just going to start coming over with random chairs now.
Where'd you steal that one this week, Keith?
I'm genuinely worried there's going to be some punk kid out there, a very impressionable young man, listening to us going, they said it was all right. And then he's going to wind up in jail and before the judge. And, young man, why did you decide to steal that chair? Well, these three guys on the internet said it was okay.
Well, we're covered. We're on the internet. So. It may or may not be true.
And we may or may not condone it.
Traveling the Vortex neither condones or endorses the stealing of chairs.
Thank you.
I get it right that time?
Yes.
Yes. All
right. It's our official position on the matter.
Have we dragged this gag out long enough?
I think so.
Let's move on to our
But if you
reviews.
Have a chair you'd like to donate... we won't ask any questions where it came from. Contact us through Patreon. Let's talk some Who, huh?
Actually, shouldn't we have them contact us through Craigslist for that one?
Do we have a Craigslist account?
I'll set one up. It'll get us three new chairs.
You should totally set up a Nebraska Furniture Mart button on the website. And we'll set up a bridal registry.
Just three chairs.
Three
chairs. Oh, wow. All right.
For those of you that don't live around here, Nebraska Furniture Mart is kind of like a little more of an upscale IKEA, where their stuff is just as expensive, but you don't have to put it together yourself.
There's a Nebraska Furniture Mart in Kansas City, Missouri. No, Kansas City, Kansas.
Yes.
Actually, it's probably in Overland Park, isn't it?
You could pay for it, and we'll go pick it up.
It's in Wyandotte County. Nebraska Furniture Mart.
Yeah.
It's in Kansas City.
Well, there's one in Nebraska.
Yeah, no.
The main one's in Nebraska. Omaha, right?
Kansas City's in Missouri, which is confusing.
Most of it.
Yeah, Sylvester McCoy was kind of weirded out by that.
Most people are.
I bet Sylvester's never stolen a chair.
I don't know. The way he was looking...
Stole that golf cart.
Yeah.
He did steal a golf cart. No, he did not steal it. He borrowed it temporarily, gave it back after he was done joyriding through the car.
He joyrided a golf cart.
I suppose he stole it in the same way the doctor would have stolen something. He returned it eventually. You know?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Or left it for someone else.
I wonder if that cop ever got that motorcycle back in Doctor Who the movie.
That's a good question.
It was before it got recovered.
I mean, before transponders, so.
It was before Uber, too. That would have saved him.
The doctor wouldn't have needed to steal a motorcycle then.
The doctor's got an Uber account on his sonic screwdriver. Call up Uber.
Now I'm imagining Peter Capaldi with his sonic sunglasses of calling Uber.
We have completely derailed. Let's get back on track.
At least we're back on Who.
Good point.
We have completely derailed. Let's get back on track.
I got it. I'll bring it back around. A panda in a stolen chair.
A what?
Panda in a stolen chair.
A panda in a stolen chair.
Was the chair stolen there?
It is now.
Oh, okay. I guess if he took it, who knows where he got it from? I doubt it was from his home on Gallifrey. Who knows?
In Soviet Russia, chair steals
no,
you.
No, we're not going there this week.
The Sands of Life. Sheridan Moorkirk has just been elected president of Earth. The harsh realities of who really runs the planet are just beginning to dawn on her. And what's more, she's starting to hear voices. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Romana encounter a mass of aliens headed to Earth. Aliens who have already made the mistake of upsetting the infamous Cuthbert, an all-powerful CEO of the conglomerate, by destroying one of his space platforms. Will the Doctor and Romana be able to avert interspecies war? No, excuse me. That will destroy all life on Earth.
Crickets.
I'll tell you. If I could give the cast a dun-dun-dun, it would be a big one.
The cast was phenomenal.
Unfortunately, it was a stellar cast in a less-than-stellar story. Two-part story, nonetheless.
It was a stellar casting.
Yeah.
I think our stellar cast was unfortunately not given much to do.
No, I agree, but I think all of their performances were very good.
Yeah.
I even think down to that. I think they performed their characters to their best abilities. I think, unfortunately, the story, and I... Complete apologies to
his name Nicholas,
Nicholas Briggs, who wrote this and directed this.
Which you think?
Because he has written some good stuff, but it just I don't know.
I think it had a good nugget.
I didn't
but
hate
then it wound up stretching for far too long.
Well, here's the problem that I had with
the first part. Is technically
it's two
three.
Parts, and it feels rushed. And by that I mean it feels like there should have been...
The interesting part felt rushed.
Well,
we spent all this time in the desert taking forever establishing everything, and then it gets to the actual threat and peril for the Earth, and that tends to go by really quickly.
See, I think that it was paced poorly in the two parts. It's like the first part was rushed, and the second part was rushed. And I really feel like that it was like there's a threat, and then suddenly there's not. And then there's a threat, and then suddenly there's not. And it was like there was no... There was, I guess by rushed, I don't mean that the story felt like it was rushed along, because you're right. We did kind of maybe spend a little too much time in the desert. On the flip side, when they take the beast and take off with it, and then we've got this really good element of a story, of the nuggets there. You know, what do we do? Where do we go with this? And then suddenly it's like, oh, okay, well, we're going to flood the earth with a toxic poison that's going to kill these things, and that'll save humanity, because if these things actually do go through their birthing, they're going to kill humanity. And so it just seemed like a real resistance from the land to believe the doctor that they were in the wrong place, that they were infallible. She says that. She said, we're infallible. They say that. I suppose it was probably a collective voice. They said that they're infallible. And then the doctor's like, I'll give you proof as to why this is the wrong place. And then he never really presents concrete proof. It's like later he says, you know...
Until the end.
The reason why they decide not to continue the birthing process is because the president, which was it was good, it just wasn't big enough, was the president decides to keep them from dumping the toxin on the land. And it was like the land just goes, oh, you stopped it, we won't die? Okay, we'll move on. There was too much of a turnaround. So there's too much, maybe it drags out too much at the beginning of both of these stories, and then the resolution for both of these stories, it seems like, oh, we're nearing 45 minutes, we've got to just quickly wrap this up, move on so we can do our second part. And to me, I think it might have been even better to combine these into one story and take out a lot of the padding.
Yeah.
And draw out the interesting nuggets of it and make 45 minutes, and then maybe it wouldn't feel so rushed, even though it's only 45 minutes as opposed to 130. And I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on what exactly could have been done to make this better.
It's not a bad story. It's just a middle-of-the-road story. It's a fine, serviceable story. I thought it was a little telegraphed that they were in the wrong place, obviously.
Yeah.
We get that fairly early. That's like, that can't be right. But then as soon as we get word that whatever experiment that Cuthbert is working on his secret space station involves time and space, it's like, oh, well.
Yeah.
There we go. I mean, he's obviously...
And you get that really early on.
You know, so... And then waiting for what really amounts to 5 segments of story...
Yes.
...for that reveal to come out is kind of like, any time now, guys. And maybe it's because they had such a stellar guest cast that they felt like we need to give them, you know, more stuff to do. So here's some additional scenes, and here's some stuff. And, I mean, we've got David Warner. How excited was I? David Warner. He's on the cover. David Warner! And I'm just squeeing all over the place... And unfortunately, he is the very stereotypical megalomaniac bad guy. He's not even an interesting bad guy, which killed me, because he's David Warner. He's just kind of the bad guy.
Even when he's a bad guy, he's a really likable bad guy.
Yeah.
And here, he's not.
The whole character just kind of laid there. And Cuthbert,
he didn't have good motivations for the...
He's not even an interesting name. He's like Cher. Cuthbert.
I disagree. I quite like the character Cuthbert. I kind of like this whole mysterious... The doctor doesn't even know who this guy is, but he's so famous on Earth, and it's like that kind of treads a mystery there as well. And I sort
if
of
he
like,
comes back, they can fix
I
it.
I sort but... of like. Well, I'll let you in on a little nugget here pretty soon. But what I really liked about it is the fact that every time you see David Warner play a villain, he plays a heavy villain. And he's quite frequently playing villains and things. He's been other things as well, but he's quite frequently playing villains. And it's a real heavy villain. So it was really kind of neat to see David Warner be able to kind of reel it back and play more of a middle-of-the-road corporate villain, which I really liked.
I don't mind
that
he was corporate. I don't mind that he was reeled back from his normal heavy. I just wish Cuthbert had been more interesting. He could have played corporate, and he could have still been... more powerful. He could have played corporate and been more conniving. He could have played corporate.
See, I don't
and been
think he needed to be conniving because I just think was, what comes know. Across in this character that I really liked was his smugness. That's what I really liked about this character. He was just very smug and just very believed that he was going to get his way. And so I disagree. I love the way David Warner played it. I don't think it laid flat.
I think he played it really well.
I think it was a good character.
I'm not taking anything away from David Warner.
I didn't know this ahead of time. I didn't know this ahead of time, but I found out later after I'd heard this story that apparently Cuthbert was a character that Nicholas Briggs had back when they were doing the audio visuals. It was a character that he really had kind of formulated and developed, and they've already asked David, obviously it's already happened, but they've already asked David Warner to come back and play Cuthbert again in this particular series. So, they spoiled it on the little Vortex podcast thing that they had behind the scenes. So Cuthbert will come back, and his sidekick, which I don't know if you guys knew this, did you know that Toby Haydock played, what was the character's name?
Mr. Dork.
Did you guys know it was Toby Haydock?
I saw his name on the cover. I didn't know that.
That's who it was. And he's coming back. And then the character that kind of just laid there, and I thought to the actress's fault, was Hallie Atwell's president.
Moorcook,
but they called her, kept calling her real name?
Sheridan.
Who played Sheridan. And I was ecstatic to. In fact, I didn't see the cover of this, so I had no idea who was in it other than David Warner. It came to mind immediately when I heard him. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's David Warner. And then I had to go back and verify it because I'm not as familiar with him, but it sounded like David Warner to me. And but when I heard Hallie Atwell, it was one of those, I know that voice. Who is that? It's really, really familiar. And so that's when I went and I said, verified David Warner. And then I looked and I went, oh, that's Hallie Atwell. No wonder I recognized her voice. So I was just excited that she was in this audio play, but the character was just kind of It was very... I like the concept of she is elected because the people really want somebody that will put the conglomerate in their place. That will kind of, they're tired of conglomerate-run Earth and society and them having such a heavy hand in everything. And so it's somebody that's going to stand up against a conglomerate and basically bring the power back to the people or back to the office.
It's a great political idea.
So she goes there, and then immediately the first thing she does is kind of kowtow to him, which is an interesting dynamic. It can be in the story. But then throughout this whole thing, and part of the smugness plays into this, but through this whole thing until the very end, she never really stands up to him until the very end. And then even at the end, you get the impression that, she's going to pretty much cow down to him because money is what money talks. And they make that point, which I think is a good reason why they can bring Cuthbert back later. But I think they're going to have to bring Hallie back as well to play to play this out. So I think maybe there's more of a nugget there. That they feel like they need to drag out. Maybe that's why this feels so humdrum, but that's the character that disappointed me, to be honest.
Yeah, I was same reaction. I was like, okay, this president could be really interesting, and then unfortunately she wasn't. And I don't think there was necessarily anything that Hallie did wrong with the way that she played her. I think it was just what the material that she was given. And then there was the general. And it was like, can we get a
I was
more
just waiting for him to die.
Yeah, I know. Can we get a more stereotypical military?
General Vincent?
Yeah.
Who, anybody know what part of Texas he was from? Because I'm betting it was somewhere deep south in Texas, but...
I don't know. He didn't really seem like an Austin Texan. He was more of anywhere else besides Austin.
Yeah. I don't know. It just felt like you gave me this story, and we've got salmon. We've got space salmon swimming upstream to get to the desert, but they're on the wrong desert, and we figured that out pretty early. And then you give me these other three characters that unfortunately are just not very interesting. You've got the military mindset guy who's going to go blow up the salmon. You've got the corporate guy that wants to utilize the salmon for whatever scientific research he can get.
And no, he wants to...
He just wants to destroy him.
He wants to destroy him. Now, he wants to find out what makes him tick.
What makes him tick.
So he can destroy him.
Because they screwed up his experiment.
Right, that's the thing is, it's a vendetta because of the fact that they screwed up his experiment when they came out of the vortex in the wrong place. And they came out of the vortex in the wrong place because of his experiment.
Right. And then you gave me the president who... didn't really do it. I mean, she stood up to the military guy more than she stood up to the, you know, and that was all after
Cuthbert, because, well, it, and that's where I think that I felt like she needed to be the character needed to be a little stronger. It needed to be a little more, a little more convincing that, hey, I just got elected president. Now I've got a role to fulfill. And I think that it's tropish to do something like the unsure politician that has kind of bitten off more than they can chew and sort of playing the, once you get into office, then you kind of return to the status quo. But I think that was underplayed a little bit because I think that she needed to come in there and feel like she needed to take charge and then be kind of knocked back a couple of places.
Yeah.
That's the problem with it. She comes in and she's automatically at this level and she doesn't feel like there's any knockback. And so,
especially since she just got elected.
Yeah. So she comes in headstrong, although she seemed kind of... She seemed a bit of the reluctant politician as well because she makes it sound like that she was kind of pressed into office. She was kind of pressed through the system. But still, at that point, that's what she was elected for. And so I think that had she stood up to him and then got knocked back a peg and then kind of played it cool and then stood up to him again and then got knocked back a peg. You know, give me a few of these knocks before she finally realizes how to get past the smugness and the surety of the character, of Cuthbert's character. I think that would have played better. But unfortunately, she comes in at this same level the whole way and then suddenly stands up to him, but then returns. Then you realize we're going to return to the status quo. And I like that element of it. I like the fact that we didn't have a Rosie, the president now has all the power, and the power's back in the hands of the people that elected her. That could have been the rosy ending to this, but the reality ending of the doctor saying, well, you know, money talks, so it's, you know, the conglomerate's not going anywhere. It's going to still be here, and Cuthbert's going to get away with everything that he did. And in reality, that's the case. And I kind of like ending that way because it's not that Hollywood ending. It's kind of a different take on that. On the other hand, though, if she had been a stronger character and that was like another peg getting knocked back, that would have worked for me better, but it didn't. That didn't happen. So.
Yeah,
I think that's the frustrating thing is if you're going to bring Cuthbert back, you didn't need to pull the teeth of the president in this story for that to happen, because you could have gone ahead and gone after him with both barrels, and then in the next story, just simply come out and said he's got the best lawyers. We couldn't hold him. We couldn't do this.
Oh yeah.
Boom. Done.
Easily fixed.
Give us a little bit of the maybe he's in prison in some big cushy white collar, you know, resort type prison, and he's running things from his cell, and not really. What?
Spoilers.
Oh well, okay.
Not for Doctor Who, for another property.
For another property. I don't know. I just felt like we got three very uninteresting characters, and then we got Space Salmon, and in the middle of both of them, we've got the Doctor Romana running around
trying to convince somebody of something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and
not being very convincing about it.
Romana does a better job than the Doctor does in trying to convince people.
Well,
and unfortunately, Tom doesn't get really the chance to be his charming, funny self in this either.
Well, I don't think he needs
to
be.
He's more serious.
I think the stakes are high. And so when the stakes are high, the Fourth Doctor doesn't have a lot of that charm and wit because he understands. That's one of the things that his portrayal came across to me, that he realizes the stakes here, and so there's no fun in games.
It starts off kind of fun in games.
It does start off fun.
It does.
Asking about hard-boiled eggs.
So I can actually excuse...
You don't want to mix that with sand.
I can sort of excuse the reaction and the character that's portrayed in this as the Doctor. So I like that. Now, to what you're saying, though, sometimes it's fun to get the charming video. And so when you
even
don't get that...
Even in the middle of the serious stuff,
when you don't get that in a story at all, then it kind of sets you back a little bit. Because you're... Number one, we're in a humdrum story. And number two, we're not getting witty. Fourth Doctor.
And even when when it's such a serious stakes, there's still usually some one-line off joke occasionally. And there really wasn't much of that, I thought, once it got serious. And I found the line interesting, if not Did you guys have flashes to less screamy Scream of the Shaka?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, yeah. It wasn't just me.
No.
Maybe it was just the worm aspect of them coming up from the ground, and that's just what I kept going to, and it's like he was trying to take that idea and make it better, and some aspects of it, like the time being part of them, was a really cool idea. It just almost doesn't feel like he realized it well enough.
Yeah, I also feel like the time slippage was kind of a cool...
It was
nugget.
Cool, but,
it was a cool idea.
It didn't feel like he did enough with it.
Well, that, and it felt very poorly realized, because if all you're going to do is have the Doctor quote himself...
Drop references and...
Or...
Misname the companions.
It's kind of... I don't know, when he's going, Harry Sullivan is an idiot, and quoting Genesis...
Imbecile.
It's very... I felt kind of marketed to...
It's pandering.
The fanboys. But yeah, it came across as pandering, because it's like, okay, but if you don't do anything with that, I don't care.
Well, and I wonder, and this doesn't make it right, but I wonder if it was an easy way to recognize that there was a time slip going on by giving us something familiar, so we knew that we've seen these things. These are things we're familiar with. And you don't have a lot of Big Finish to reference for the Fourth Doctor, because we're not even fully into the second season yet. So you couldn't have used much from the first season of the audios.
Right.
And so I think the easiest way to do is go back and grasp things that people are familiar with, so that you can kind of convey to the audience that there is a time slip going on here. And I think that was the intent. Now, I don't think they pulled it off quite well enough, because it does come across as pandering. But on the flip side, I think that was probably the easiest way for them to convey that that's what was happening
to
the listener.
It almost felt like they put the time slips in just to have those references in the story.
No, I see. I don't think that's true.
I
didn't feel that way.
To me, it just felt like the time slips were there just to be there. Like the effects that they put on the voices when the Lon were giving birth and all of that was effective enough for me that I understood that time was being distorted around them.
Well, I got the impression that the big time slip, the first one, was the dematerialized, that the one we got the big chunk and him naming other companions and stuff like that, was when they come out, they dematerialize out of the vortex. It's when they come through whatever destroyed the space station, when they come through and they... That was the big giant one. They had those little time slips every time one of them did a birthing. But those were small. I think the big
one... We didn't
one
get the references
the big,
in the small
Exactly,
ones.
That's what I'm saying. The big one that was very obvious
and
was
that
the
one,
first big
that
one.
That one I was more okay with. It's the
through.
Second one where we got more... references. Like the second time that there was the big time slip, that one felt more unnecessary than the first one, because I don't remember why plot wise it was even there.
Well, the time slip in the middle one was the first birthing, the one that had.
Well,
the,
I thought it was in the second part.
Oh, but it was. Well, remember there were three that were birthed.
Yeah, but
the first one birthed at the end of the first one.
Yeah,
or the end of the first story. The second one birthed, and because Tom said, "Oh, the second one it birthed." There before they got to, well, the one was already dead, and was it, well, it wasn't dead yet. It was being experimented on when the second one birthed, and then the Fourth Doctor calls out and says the third one's getting ready to birth, because that was like the point of no return. Once that happens, then they all birth.
See, and I guess because there wasn't any of those quotes in the third one.
I don't remember quotes in the second one. What quotes were in the second
I just,
one?
I don't remember it being at the birth. I don't remember quotes during the birth. I remember the one when they dematerialized in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then one in the second episode, or the second part.
Well, there was one at the end of the first episode, and then there was another one at the beginning of this, well, near the beginning of this, that first part of the second story. That's the one I think you're remembering there.
Maybe.
The other problem that I had is, if you're going to quote Doctor Who, that's fine. If you're going to use that as a benchmark for us, that's fine. If you're going to bring up, if I were to show you a child and point out that this child would become totally evil down the road and be the cause of deaths of millions, could you then kill that child? You better have a story structured around that quote.
See, I think you're
right.
And
I don't think you can throw that one out there as a drop.
But I think that
because it's too momentous.
That's the problem, is he was making benchmarks and he was grasping at the most familiar lines. And that indeed is one of the most familiar lines from the Fourth Doctor. So... I don't think it was so much for the bearing of the statement as much as it was the familiarity with the statement.
I agree. That was probably the intent, but it just...
Would we feel that way so much now more since we've seen the magician's assistant, though? Apprentice. When we did magician's apprentice, than when we did. So we have seen that. It has been addressed. It has been a very
If I had listened to this story first, I'd have gotten excited when I heard it, and then I'd have gotten let down when I realized that's not what this story was about.
Okay.
Having come after Magician's Apprentice, I was even more excited and even more let down.
Well, even Big Finish has addressed that in the Davros story with the Eighth Doctor, they've built around the whole...
Right. But that's what I mean. If you're going to use that quote, Davros has to show up. It's almost a, you know, the two are tied together. Yeah. I just feel
I'm a little more forgiving there. But
I don't want to believe that it's pandering. But I agree with Keith. It felt a little.
Yeah.
Bit
no.
Like
I agree. I think it felt like pandering. But
so. But you know, it's
difficult audio, to strike a visualization.
Yeah, that's true. I think the effects that they put on there were sufficient enough.
No, the effects they used. I think the production of this was beyond phenomenal. I loved the way that, especially the first time slip was done with the synthesizing and the loops and the things that they did with it was very effective. And the fact that everybody dropped to a complete. I mean, that was the style of that was done really well. Audially, this thing was phenomenal.
And you had a lot of
the voices from the land had the right amount of synthesized element to them. So there were a lot of pieces of it.
You had a lot of different pieces that went into this one. You had the news report at the beginning that then, you know, he being all, you know, Max Warp announcer voice guy that then transitioned into TV.
Nicholas Bridges.
Yeah. Which then transitioned into the coming across from a TV speaker, and then you've got the synthesized land voices, and then you've got even the sound effects. Anybody else notice we heard a lot of K-9's drive motor in this one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Things that I didn't notice before when we've had K-9 in an audio. There was a lot of, and not just because he was stuck in the sand, but I mean just, and it's like, oh, it's K-9. He's actually, it sounds like he's in the studio with them running around.
Yeah, the sound editors on this did a phenomenal
job. And the music was so spot on for that time period. Yeah. It was so well done.
They really drove that music.
That was one of the things I loved the most, was the music throughout the entire thing. Speaking of K-9, I don't like how they treated him.
K-9 got squashed.
Wondered when we get to that.
But, because I didn't see it, I refused to visualize it. And I know he's going to be okay.
It was interesting that when K-9 wasn't there in the first story of this season, my first thought was they couldn't get Bob Baker's permission to use K-9 in the Fourth Doctor Adventures. So I thought, okay, well, we'll get a K-9-less season. So suddenly in the first story of this two-parter, he shows up and it's, what's his name doing the voice? Liam Neeson? Or not
John Neeson.
John Neeson doing the voice. Liam Neeson, that would be something else.
I don't think I'd like him.
John Leeson doing the voice, and I thought, oh, wow, so they actually do have K-9 in this, so he's going to play a predominant role. Well, he's in half of the first story
before
he gets
squished. Prominent role. I love their excuse of how they didn't let him be a part of the story of, oh, the sand will cause havoc with your gears, and then, okay, well, he's going to come out. Well, he's going to solve this issue way too quickly. We have to get rid of him, so we squash him.
It's funny to when you look at this, Nicholas Briggs really, really fanboyed when he did this.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The reason being is because Nicholas Briggs also did the music on this, which is why it has that very Fourth Doctor era feel, which I can't even remember who the composer at the time was, but he mimicked that style of music very much so. Giving K-9 the elements that they struggled with in reality back in the day, and they would use those things that are written here to write K-9 out of stories because of the limitations of the dog. He really felt like that
he
was a piece
too,
of that era, so he did that, even though he didn't have to.
Yeah.
He did that and to make it really feel like a product of the 1970s.
Because he knew he couldn't.
He
fanboyed
all over this.
K-9 hover just because he wanted to.
Right. I mean, he fanboyed all over this.
I agree. Because
he
if
stayed
the
true
doctor,
to continuity.
If the doctor had rescued K-9 and picked him up and run with him, which was a great bit, 8 meters, 7 meters, six meters. I get it, K-9. I can see her. 3, 2. It was like K-9 was still compelled to keep going, even though. But, I mean, if he could have carried him all the way to the chopper and flown him to London.
The whole storyline would have been so much quicker.
The second half of this story is
would have been one part of
different.
That.
Yeah, because K-9 would have been there to hold them off. K-9 would have been there to, you know, and maybe you could have given Cuthbert some evil, oh, I'm going to steal your dog, but I just... could have been Cruella de Vil.
Yeah.
Was the second time slippage, was that somehow maybe the first three came through... The three elders came through first, and then the rest of them came through later?
I didn't get that impression.
I didn't get that impression either, but now that I think about it, I wonder if that was what they were trying to
do. No, because when they arrived...
You're right. The third one was the birthing, was the why we got the slip there.
Yeah.
But you're right. There was
another
one in
there. Which I didn't remember
any
lines in the birthing.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't. But see, I didn't remember any lines in the second one either. So
well, the second one is when we get the touch these two wires together and the Daleks.
Well,
oh,
was
be
that
no
the
more.
Second one I was thinking? That was oh, no, the first one was yeah the companion
the first one
recalls.
Is, well, the companion recalls.
But
and
that's
the,
not
and
even
the child
during.
Line.
That's not even necessarily during the actual time slip.
That's after effect.
He's talking to Romana.
Well,
right,
but
and
it's,
calls
but it's,
her.
But it's an after effect of that. You know,
yeah, because it's
that's
it's
what
setting
I'm saying though.
Up, yeah.
It was callbacks to that.
But the actual
the time slip was the child line.
That was the first one.
Yeah, and
the
second one
was the Harry Sullivan
think,
is an imbecile. I thought those were in the same one.
Those two might have been in the same
I
one.
I think those were both
was,
in the first one.
Yeah,
but
then,
the second
but
one
then
was
there
the touch
was
two.
The touch the two wires and the Daleks are no more. It was a much shorter time slip.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much the main line from that part.
And again, using both of those from the same episode, maybe even...
Well, that's probably yeah. why it was so heavy-handed for you, because you feel like it needs to go somewhere if you're going to use both of those lines.
Oh, no, that's what it was, because they used more than Harry Sullivan as an imbecile from Ark in Space. He used the, look at them out here, they're indomitable.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't remember which slippage that was in.
I don't remember. I think that was the first one.
That might have been tied in with the first one. There was a lot. I don't know. The first one felt like it went on and on and on.
Yeah,
it was
that's
all
right.
quotes. But at any rate.
Well, the first one had to lay some impact, and so I understand why it went on and on. But, yeah, no, it felt like pandering to me as well.
So, at any rate.
Romana was still pretty good.
Romana was still pretty good. Mary Tam did a good job in this.
I thought the fourth Doctor did.
And yeah.
I like the idea of a female species reaching out to a female of another species in order to communicate. It's very mother instinct. They can connect. They have similarities as far as bond, and so it made sense, especially that Romana was able to, and Romana having less than a latent telepathic ability helps. But then when the president also hears it as well, I liked where they went with that. Is it was that common link between them that allowed them to at least find a sympathetic voice for them. So that was clever. I liked that. Not that that's not tropey either, but...
middling story. Yeah. It was okay.
It still makes me excited to listen to more of this line.
Oh, it does. I mean, it's as with anything, there is no such thing as bad who. All who is good who, and even big, you know, no big finish is necessarily bad big finish. Well, except for that one.
Depends on the story.
I just.
There was just so much potential here that it didn't feel reached.
Maybe part of it too. And honestly, is coming off of Friday Night Who. I had forgotten how enjoyable Armageddon Factor is as a story. I don't know why. I remember as a kid not really liking it. I remember as a kid just thinking, where this is the wrap of the geek, okay. And that nothing really... I remember the time loop seemed to go on and on and on forever.
Which it does.
The marshal was constantly yelling fire, and the ship was constantly going... just over and over and over and over again. And it's there, but it doesn't feel like it's there more than it needed to be.
Yeah.
But you've got great bits from the Doctor. You've got a really interesting story. And you've got some fantastic canine stuff. And even Romana, you know, I think is pretty good in that, despite the fact that she's
still kind of deregulated down to companion in distress, especially when she gets locked in the cage at the end of the sixth part. But I think maybe coming off of that, which is the whole reason we scheduled that, was it's a Mary Tam story. So we'll watch some Mary Tam, and then coming off of a really, really good Mary Tam story into this one. Maybe that affected it a little bit.
Could be.
Maybe if we'd watched Power of Kroll, we would have been okay.
We'll put that one for the next one.
Yeah.
And that one, the big finish will be higher automatically.
Set the bar low.
Could be worse. Could be better. I didn't really like it.
What do we got coming up on the schedule, Sean?
Well, next week on the schedule, Friday Night Who is The End of the World, starring Ninth Dr. Christopher Eccleston. And the reason for that is that our show next week is Beyond the Doctor with Christopher Eccleston in Elizabeth. So if you have the opportunity, go pick up the movie and watch it. And then
Or boot up Netflix.
Or boot up Netflix. It is on Netflix. And is he in the second one?
I don't think so.
I didn't think so either. I wonder if that's a spoiler.
Ooh.
I don't know. It's been so long since I've seen Elizabeth, I don't remember. But so we'll be talking about his performance in that. And then just a reminder that the following week, Friday Night Who, is one of those additions and revisions that we made. We are still watching Ambassadors of Death, but we're not watching parts 1 through 3. We're watching parts 1 through 4 because it's 7 parts and not 6. So keeping with our, let's do the first half and then second. And then some Lethbridge Stewart shorts on the show that week in between the two parts. So still got plenty of time to get all those things done. And I guess I should throw out a reminder that if you haven't already started, there's still a little bit of time left of the month for you to get started on the Stone Rose for the Traveling the Vortex Book Club Goodreads selection for April, which now that I'm done with the Stephen King book, I can jump on.
You can get started on that, yeah. I'm usually ahead of the game, but I haven't even started Stone Rose yet. So. All right, well, if you're not already a subscriber on or a supporter on Patreon, why not join Patreon and or become a supporter on Patreon, support this podcast. Every 100% of that goes back into this podcast, and we may even, who knows, use some of it to buy chairs. since we can't steal them, because we don't condone that.
Or endorse it.
Or endorse it. Or condemn it. No, we do condemn it. We do condemn it. Don't steal chairs. All right. Also, if you'll notice on the right rail of our website, we have added a few more sponsors, so be sure to go and check those out for us. If you were living in the UK and you felt a little left out because most of our stores or sponsors were U.S.-centric, you can go on there and purchase things through ForbiddenPlanet.com and buy things in your own country. So for our UK listeners, we've got that opportunity for you as well. I don't have anything else. If you guys don't have anything else?
Not Quite Right Spoilers is too long for a Twitter handle.
Well,
I will not be registering.
We'll let you know what we do next week with that. I would just let you know now. Maybe we're not. Spoilers.
Maybe we'll just hashtag it.
There you go.
Hashtag. Not hashtag Quite Right Spoilers.
How about not spoilers? That's plenty. That's misleading. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
Thanks for listening. And don't steal chairs.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.